Sound of snow.
A loss of home. A loss of our entire world.
LTE.
Land.
Car.
Ecologia.
ಇರಬೇಕು ಸಾಯಂಕಾಲದ ಹೊತ್ತು 7 ಗಂಟೆ ಅಂದರೆ 7 ಗಂಟೆಗೆ ಬಂದ್ಬಿಡ್ತಾವೆ. ಅದೇ 7 ಗಂಟೆ 8 ಗಂಟೆ 7 ಗಂಟೆಗೆ ಬಂದ್ಬಿಡ್ತಾವೆ. 8-9 ಗಂಟೆಗೆಲ್ಲ ಇರ್ತವೆ. ಹುಷಾರಾಗಿ ಓಡಾಡಬೇಕು.
ಸೊ ಶಿ ವಾಸ್ ಸೇಯಿಂಗ್ ದಟ್ ವೆನ್ ಶಿ ವಾಸ್ ರಿಯಲಿ ಯಂಗ್ ದ ಫಾರೆಸ್ಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಕ್ಲೋಸ್ ಬೈ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದ ಫಾರೆಸ್ಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಥಿಕ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಇಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಕ್ಲೋಸ್ ಬೈ. ದೇರ್ ವರ್ ಲಾಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಆನಿಮಲ್ಸ್ ಅರೌಂಡ್. ದೇ ವರ್ ಆನಿಮಲ್ಸ್, ದೇ ವರ್ ಬೇರ್ಸ್, ದೇ ವರ್ ವೆರಿ ಡಿಫ್ರೆಂಟ್ ಕೈಂಡ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಬರ್ಡ್ಸ್, elephants, and she's saying that there were many times where the bears used to come very close to their house, and it was it wasn't a bad thing. She was saying that the one thing that used to, that struck her about bears was their feet were very similar to our feet, saying she saw that and she's like so she kept saying that the feet were the same. And she was saying that with the elephants, we didn't have any problem with them. It was fine. They started coming here because the forest department let them come this side, since the forest was very thick over here and they had lots of food here. So she's saying we didn't have any problems, but after 7 p.m. we had to start just being aware of the fact that there might be elephants around, but the elephants didn't mean them any harm.
So I guess it's somewhere in the 1970s that this forest, the Banagatta forest, was declared a national park. But Anekal and the Banagatta forest was identified as a place which has certain keystone species of basically flora, and also one of the hotspots for elephants. So it was declared a protected national park in around the 70s. And from then is when I think there has been a lot of land changes in the forest. Basically because of the regulatory needs of the land. And India was also going through these transitions of the forest.
I'm kind of a modern settler here. I moved in here 12 years ago. And not fully again. I'm still between the city and here. My connection actually started with the Banagatta Zoo when I was in school. I liked the zoo and I always thought beyond the zoo, the world is just forest. And I didn't even think of people living here at that point in time. So the fascination was more the zoo and the forest and the fact that the elephants lived in this forest. And all this so close to Bangalore. Just 25 kilometers from Bangalore, you had heard about stories of herds of elephants. Not just stories, we have seen herds of elephants walking. So here in the ecologically sensitive zone, we have a mix of tribals and settlers. In fact, very few of the tribes left. We have had more settlers also because of lands getting fragmented around the rest of the villages. the regular revenue village, what we call as revenue villages. Villages which generate agricultural income are called as revenue villages according to the regulations. So once families started becoming smaller, nuclear families were forming, and there were fragmentation of land, and agriculture didn't make sense in very small plots of land, so people started moving closer to the forest. And so that's why we have a lot of settlers in the ecologically sensitive zone. So they're all mostly people from communities which are called as Okaligas. They are farmers. So Okaliga again has this various subset of people in it, but Okaligas are the farming community. So most of them who were farmers moved in here and cleared little plots of land so that they could settle down basically with their cows, with their livestock, whatever livestock, and then also grow a little bit of food for themselves. So the idea was more sustenance farming. This is, again, I'm talking about the 60s and the probably the 50s, 60s and the 70s. The settling down has happened till close to the 70s, only till the Forest Regulation Act could even stop all the settling activities. So you will find a mix of these communities, and at some point we have also heard about the herder community, which is the cow herd community being present here. Of course, we see very few of them now. And also there was a small weavers community who are called as the Devangas in Karnataka. Yeah, I think roughly these are the large communities, and the couple of tribes that we are aware of are the Irulikas and Lambanis. Again, are not maybe tribes, but the nomadic tribe who are not really dependent on forest, but it's an interesting tribe.
I'm Nishant. I study elephants and mostly elephant behavior. And I fell in love with elephants from when I was a kid. That's mostly because I grew up in Mysore, and Mysore was not far from some of the best protected areas in Karnataka, like Nagarhole and Bandipur. And I think my parents, every holiday, they would take me to these parks because it was close by. And every time we went there, we would see large herds of elephants in groups, sometimes solitary. And I was curious to know why they were in these groups or solitary. Although they were not humans, they were doing a lot of things that humans would do, which is socialize, greet each other, call for one another. I study elephants not very far from the city of Bangalore, maybe about 20 to 30 kilometers south of Bangalore, where you will start finding wild elephants. And this is a very interesting landscape and an area. It starts with the Bannerghatta National Park to the northeast of this landscape and continues further south to form what is one of the largest habitats, contiguous habitats, available for wild Asian elephants in the world. Bannerghatta, due to its rainfall and its its occurrence towards the northeast of this range, has largely rocky outcrops, has scrub woodland, dry thorn forest, has some grassland patches too. But further south, it opens up into this large savanna type grasslands, large areas of grasslands with short trees. And then further moving south, as the rainfall increases, you move into deciduous habitat and then even into evergreen forests, which basically tells us that elephants can actually live in very diverse habitats and thrive. An Asian elephant herd would require something like 600 to 700 square kilometers to range in. And if you just take the administrative boundary of Bannerghatta itself, it's only about 250 square kilometers, which basically means that elephants range beyond the administrative boundary of this particular national park. So the geographical area itself is in the Dharwar Craton, and it forms a part of the rocky outcrops that you continue to see close to Bangalore city as well.
ಯಾಕಂದ್ರೆ ಈ ಕಡೆಯಿಂದ ಬೇಯ್ಕೊಂಡು ಇಲ್ಲಿಗೆ ಬಂದ್ರೆ ಕಮ್ಮಿ ಆಯ್ತದಲ್ಲ, ಅವಾಗ ಹೊಡೆದ್ಬಿಡ್ತಾರೆ. ಕಾಡನ್ನ ಉಳಿಸೋರು ಇವರು ಮಂತೆ ಇಲ್ಲಿ ಈ ನಮ್ಮ ಕಾಡಿನಲ್ಲಿ ಆನೆಗಳು ವಿಪರೀತ.
There are elephants, bison, leopards, peacocks and deer in the forest. Irulika say that an elephant needs 70 to 80 kgs of food every day. They travel 10 to 15 kilometers as a herd in the night. Tamil Nadu border is very close from this place. They travel in the same path that their ancestors did. They know the exact crop and the harvest time and come only at that time.
ಆನೆ ಒಂತಾವೇನು ತಿನ್ನಲ್ಲ.
ದೇರ್ ನಾಸ್ಟ್ರಿಲ್ಸ್ ಆರ್ ವೆರಿ ಪವರ್ಫುಲ್
ಅದು ಅವ್ರು ಏನು ಹೇಳ್ತಾರೆ
ಅಂಡ್ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಪಿಕ್ ಅಪ್ ಸೆನ್ಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಕ್ವಿಕ್ಲಿ. ದೇ ನೋ ವೇರ್ ದ ಸ್ಟಾಕ್ ಇಸ್ ಕೆಪ್ಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ರಾನ್ಸಾಕ್ ದ ಪ್ಲೇಸ್.
ಒಂದು ರಾತ್ರಿಗೆ ಅದು
ವಿ ಡೋಂಟ್ ಮೈಂಡ್ ಇಫ್ ದೇ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಈಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಲೀವ್.
15 ಕಿಲೋಮೀಟರ್ ಸುತ್ತ.
ದ ಪ್ರಾಬ್ಲಮ್ ಇಸ್ ದ ಡ್ಯಾಮೇಜ್ ದಟ್ ದೇ ಕಾಸ್. ಅದರ್ ಅನಿಮಲ್ಸ್ ಡೋಂಟ್ ಈಟ್ ಮಚ್.
ಆನೆ
ಎಲಿಫೆಂಟ್ಸ್ ಕಮ್ ಆಸ್ ಅ ಹರ್ಡ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಡಿಸ್ಟ್ರಾಯ್ ದ ಫೀಲ್ಡ್ಸ್.
ತಮಿಳುನಾಡು ಹತ್ರ ಬಾರ್ಡರ್.
ಬಟ್ ದೀಸ್ ಪೀಪಲ್ ಡೋಂಟ್ ಚೇಸ್ ಹಿಮ್ ಅವೇ.
ತಮಿಳುನಾಡು ಕಡೆಯಿಂದ ಈ ಕಡೆ ನಾನು ಬಂದ್ರೆ
ದೇ ಸೇ ದಟ್ ದ ಫಾರೆಸ್ಟ್ ಬಿಲಾಂಗ್ಸ್ ಟು ದ ಎಲಿಫೆಂಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ನಾಟ್ ದ ಹ್ಯೂಮನ್ಸ್. ದೇ ಪ್ರೊಟೆಕ್ಟ್ ದ ಫಾರೆಸ್ಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ದ ಅನಿಮಲ್ಸ್. ಓನ್ಲಿ ದಿಸ್ ಕಮ್ಯುನಿಟಿ ಡಸ್ ದಟ್. ನೋಬಡಿ ಎಲ್ಸ್ ಡಸ್ ಇಟ್.
ಅವರು ಇರಿ ಕುರಿ ಯಾರು
ಸೊ ಬನಗಟ್ಟ ಇಸ್ ಯುನೀಕ್ ಇನ್ ದಟ್ ಸೆನ್ಸ್ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಇಟ್ಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಕ್ಲೋಸ್ ಟು ಅನ್ ಅರ್ಬನ್ ಸೆಂಟರ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಬ್ಯಾಂಗ್ಲೋರ್. Which basically means that it's also going to drive a lot of the changes, socio-cultural changes among the people in the landscape. So it's very true what Timmarayappa and others say, because initially, and when they initially used to see the elephants come to either the crop fields or in the forest, because a lot of people would take their cattle grazing in the forest. In fact, before it was declared as a national park, some of the villages were inside the park. So interactions with the elephants used to happen at a very close quarter. And so if they saw an elephant, they would watch it. They would like to see what it was doing, understand what it meant to be living with elephants. And even then you would have people, you know, adjusting their lifestyles in response to the animal movement in the area. And elephants do the same actually. They respond to what people are doing and modify their own lifestyles to adjust and be in the same space. They are spatially in the same area, but temporarily they are separated. But they use the same water body at different points in time. Villagers would use it during the day and elephants would use it at night, but it's the same water body. These were the shared spaces. But now when a lot of people are not there and you have a new set of elephants, the same elephants but who have learned through their interactions with people or with vehicles or with wires and the electricity power lines, let's say trains, all of these that have come into their lives as well, the elephants may also be wary of how to respond and react because it's not the same anymore.
I was an 18 or say 20 year old youth. At that time, HAL runway was being constructed. So, our people would say that there are demons who would come from America and work. My grandfather would pack up food and gather all the people, including women, and go and see the works. Seeing the bulldozers make so much noise and commotion, the women would scream in fear thinking that they are devils. They had never seen it. Neither had we. It was not there anywhere around us, not even in Bangalore.
ಬುಲ್ಡೇಜರ್ ನ ಅವಾಗ ಈ ನಮ್ ಕಡೆ ಇರ್ಲಿಲ್ಲ ಅನ್ನೋದು ಇತ್ತ ಬೆಂಗಳೂರಿನಲ್ಲಿ ಇಲ್ಲ.
I think one of the biggest challenge here, I don't know if people are perceiving it, but it does affect them, is the changes in the land, the idea of these the forest, deemed forest, or an ecologically sensitive zone, or an elephant corridor, because these are changing terminologies or changing visions which are not necessarily coming from people. So it's coming very top down or from a set of people who think that this is important. So I personally think, and being here, also being a resident of this place, I also feel that understanding the needs of the people and these classifications, you know, coming in a very sensible way from people is important. So I personally think that's one of the biggest challenges here. But people living here work around it. because it can get very difficult for them to deal with the forest department or anybody who is coming and or the revenue department, which suddenly says that okay, no, I mean this is what this land is. So, and again, elephant human elephant conflict is definitely a psychological burden on people practicing agriculture. So one of the reasons I think that most people stick to sericulture, as much as they may not be able to voice it, but the fact that sericulture is so comfortable for them is that elephants don't eat the mulberry plants or they don't even damage them significantly. So it's kind of an easier or a better or an economically also a viable option for the farmers to stick to it. Sustenance farming or growing their own food is reducing by the years. Every year we see that a few farmers are at least giving up growing ragi. One is of course the elephant, the fear that the elephant may raid them.
ಸಣ್ಣ ಮರಿ ಒಂದು ವಾರಕ್ಕೆ ಮೊಟ್ಟೆ ಆಗಿ ಮರಿಯಾಗಿ ನಮಗೆ ಅದು ಇಷ್ಟು ದಿನ ಒಂದು ವಾರಕ್ಕೆ ಸುಪ್ಪಾಕೋದು ವಾರ ಆದಮೇಲೆ
ಸೊ ದೀಸ್ ಆರ್ ಸಿಲ್ಕ್ ವರ್ಮ್ಸ್ ಹಿ ಗೆಟ್ಸ್ ದೆಮ್ ಬೈ ದಿ ಎಗ್ಸ್ ಹಿ ಬೈಸ್ ಕಿಲೋಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಇಟ್ ತುಂಬ ಆದಮೇಲೆ ದೆನ್ ಹಿ ಫೀಡ್ಸ್ ಮಲ್ಬೆರಿ ಟು ದ ವರ್ಮ್ಸ್ ದೇ ಗ್ರೋ ಅರೌಂಡ್ ಹಿಯರ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ ವೆನ್ ದೇ ರೀಚ್ ಸರ್ಟನ್ ಏಜ್ ಆರ್ ಮೆಚ್ಯೂರಿಟಿ ದೇ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟ್ ಮೇಕಿಂಗ್ ದ ಕೊಕೂನ್ They take these cocoons to the big silk markets where the cocoons are sold. The mulberry could grow to become a big tree. But all the mulberry you see around here would be cut to shrub level. That is how they keep it growing for multiple cycles for many years of silkworm feeding.
ಬೆಲ್ಲ ಜಲ್ಲನೆ ಉದರಿ ಬೆಲ್ಲ ದಾರತಿ ಬೆಳಗಿ ಕಲ್ಲಮ್ಮ ತಾಯಿ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಯೇ ಇಂಡಿಯವನದ ಮೇಘ ಚಂದ್ರಮ ಚಂಡಾಡಿಬ ಇಂಡಿಯ ರಾಗಿ ಬೀಸುವ ಕಲ್ಲೆ
Ragi has been the staple grain for people around Bangalore, peri-urban Bangalore, for as long as we can imagine. So it's not, because this is not a place where rice grows, it's been this dry land, plain lands for long, upland. So ragi and rain-fed ragi has always been something that has yielded in bounty also for people. Low on labor and very, very nutritious. The nutrition content of ragi, or what's called as finger millet in English, is quite high. So that's been their staple forever. And I would, one very nice thing about ragi is it still stays in the diet of most people. At least one meal, it's still there in most people, not just in the villages, but also in the city. Most people who come to work to the city still look for a one meal of ragi because that's still part of their DNA and they need it for their nourishment. In terms of agriculture or farming for ragi, there is people, of course, the settling communities who came from other villages got their own seeds, their own ragi seeds, and then settled down in these places. But eventually, over a period of time, because ragi seeds tend to evolve, most seeds evolve for the conditions of the place. So they say that there are no new variants which have been developed by farmers in the last 10 years. So it's almost like breeding, evolutionary breeding among the farming community has completely come to a standstill. Because farmers have preferred to buy these hybrid seeds. And also I think one of the promises of these hybrid seeds has been a lower duration crop. While most traditional seeds take five to five and a half months to completely mature and be ready for harvest, most of these hybrids are done in 3 months. And what happens is, it's not that farmers need this in 3 months, but then once the duration is shortened, the exposure to climate variances or these uncertainties in rainfall or any other uncertainty is reduced. Reduced time means reduced exposure to risk. So I think that has been one selling point. And here again, because people are one worried about the elephants, and then of course rainfall patterns have always been erratic, they're still a little erratic. So people find it easier to just go for the 3-month hybrid variety so that they're just finishing off their ragi growing season quickly. Yeah. So I think there are pros and cons. As much as we all want the native varieties to come back, and we want to even explore the possibilities of evolutionary breeding, so that there are, it is part of the climate change narrative also, that it's important to keep the native seeds on the land growing, because native seeds have the ability to grow their resilience over climate change, over changes in soil, and over even changes in people's attitudes.
ಇನ್ನೊಬ್ಬರ ಮೇಲೆ ಹೇಳೋದು ಬೇಡ, ನಮ್ಮ ತಾಯಿಗೆ 12 ಜನ ಮಕ್ಕಳು ಇಷ್ಟೆಲ್ಲ ಮಾಡಿ ಇಷ್ಟು ಮಾಡೋಳು, ಕಟ್ಟಿಗೆ ಮಾಡೋಳು. ಇವತ್ತು
ಮೈ ಮದರ್ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ 12 ಚಿಲ್ಡ್ರನ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಸೋ ಮಚ್ ಹಾರ್ಡ್ ವರ್ಕ್.
ಇವಾಗ ಸೌದೆ ನೀವು ಅಡುಗೆ ಮಾಡಲ್ಲ.
ನೌ ನೋ ಒನ್ ಗೋಸ್ ಟು ದ ಫೀಲ್ಡ್ಸ್, ನೋ ಒನ್ ಯೂಸಸ್ ಫೈರ್ ವುಡ್ ಫಾರ್ ಕುಕಿಂಗ್. ಥಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಗಾಟನ್ ಈಸಿಯರ್ ವಿತ್ ಅ ಗ್ಯಾಸ್ ಸ್ಟೌ.
ಶುಗರ್ ಬರ್ದಿರ
ಅಂಡ್ ಇನ್ ಮಿನಿಟ್ಸ್ ಫುಡ್ ಇಸ್ ರೆಡಿ. ದಟ್ ಈಸ್ ವೈ ಬಿ ಪಿ ಡಯಾಬಿಟೀಸ್ ಹಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಇನ್ಕ್ರೀಸ್.
ಶುಗರ್ ಅನ್ನೋದು ಗೊತ್ತೇ ಇಲ್ಲ, ಇದೇನು ಹಿಂಗಂತಾರೆ?
We were not even aware as to what all these ailments were. We do not know what was coffee or upma, really. We were not aware of these things while we grew up. The dish pongal was known when the Vishnumaya Swamiji ashram prepared and served it to us. We only knew about rotis and balls made from finger millet. There was another kind of rice available called Dodbere Nadu. And if we had it along with buttermilk or curds, we would never fall sick. Now there is something called Sona Masuri and other varieties. There is no essence or goodness in that. Whatever happens, the old way of life has to come back. And all the spraying of medicines and all this has to stop. If not now, sometime in the future it will happen. Maybe another 100-odd years are needed. That is when they will learn. They need to falter and fail. Only then they will learn.
And so now when they look at people, they may have many memories that they'll be carrying with them and accordingly respond. And very often it may not be as calm and quiet and peaceful as it used to be, let's say 50, 60 years ago. Now elephants have learned that if I see a certain person or hear a certain sound, then it means that it's either a cracker or maybe even a gunshot, and I need to respond in a certain way. And people of course have picked that up too. So they might be finding it really scary to actually be close to an elephant when it's either close to the village or actually walking through the village, on the village road, let's say, or in their crop fields. Because the moment they see the elephant in the crop field, they try to shoo it away for obvious reasons that it's going to damage the crops. But the elephants now may respond very aggressively and not just move away, because over time they have habituated, they're conditioned to what people are doing, and they think they need to shoo people away and feed on the crops. So the negative interactions that we see today, and I'm not saying all of it is negative, there are lots of positive interactions and neutral interactions that we say, but a lot of the negative interactions we see is also dependent on how people have treated and interacted with the elephant. And that's what we end up seeing today. And you will see that in the responses that, let's say, Timraju has, or any other person from the landscape would have. And they would say the elephants have changed too. And it's a very powerful statement, actually, because that's a clear acceptance that our interactions with the animal has changed and the animal is responding to what we've been doing as well.
ಆದರೆ ಒಂದು ಹೇಳ್ತೀನಿ, ಮುಖ್ಯವಾಗಿ ಕಾಡು ಉಳಿದಿದ್ದೇ ಈ ಜನದಿಂದ. ಯಾವ ಜನಗಳಿಂದ? ಹೌದು,
I would like to reiterate something important, that if there are forests surviving today, it is because of these people,
the Iruligans.
Yes, the forest survived because of these people, and the locals like us are the ones who are now spoiling it. It could be people like you, me, or the prominent people in the villages, MLAs, ministers. It could be any of these people, but no one from the community. Even if they had to chop down a tree, it would be a very thought-out decision. Also, if they had to cut greens, it would be only on top parts, not the roots. If they had to dig a root vegetable, they would not remove it completely from the roots because they would say it needs to be there for the coming year.
A lot of people come to the city for work and then they go back to their villages at night. Sometimes they have out-migrated entirely. And then now the younger generations are living in the city predominantly and would only go visit their parents or grandparents occasionally, maybe over the weekends or maybe a few times in a month or maybe a few times in a year. What that basically means is that your basic connect with the land itself is slowly dwindling and it's, you know, it's erasing.
But now, what has happened is that there is control over the forest which was not there earlier. So, they would use sandalwood and then what happened was, everyone understood the value of sandalwood and made it a business and completely destroyed it along with other valuable trees. Even when forest officials tried to control it, it was not possible. Then the government started granting them 2 acres of land each. Then things started easing out when wherever these people stayed, there were boundaries that were set up and seats were placed over their huts, which made it more habitable for them. Some of them started giving their children education after the ashram came into existence. After Ramakrishna Ashrama came, things really brightened up here. So later the Swamijis would visit every village and give clothes and basic essentials to people and also at times give food to them. So all these kinds of benefits were provided.
ಇಲ್ಲಿ ಬಂದ ಮೇಲೆ ಏನಾಯಿತು ಈ ಸ್ವಾಮಿಗಳು ಹಳ್ಳಿ ಹಳ್ಳಿಗೂ ಹೋಗೋದು ಇವ್ರ ಜನಗಳಿಗೆಲ್ಲ ಬಟ್ಟೆ ಕೊಡೋದು ಇವ್ರ ಮಕ್ಕಳಿಗೆಲ್ಲ ಅಥವಾ ಅಲ್ಲೇ ಮನೆಗೆ ತೊಗೊಂಡೋಗಿ ಊಟ ಕೊಡೋದು ನೋಡಿದೆ ಇದೇ ಹುಡುಗನಿಗೆ ಸ್ವಲ್ಪ ಆಶ್ರಮ ಬಂದ ಮೇಲೆ
ನೌ ವಾಟ್ ಹ್ಯಾಪನ್ಡ್ ಇಸ್ ದಟ್ ಆಫ್ಟರ್ ದ ಆಶ್ರಮ ವಾಸ್ ಸೆಟ್ ಅಪ್ ದೇ ಆಸ್ಕ್ಡ್ ಎವ್ರಿವನ್ ಟು ಗೆಟ್ ಸಮ್ ಎಜುಕೇಷನ್ ಬಿಫೋರ್ ದ ವಿಪ್ರೊ ವೈಸ್ ಚೇರ್ಮನ್ ಗಾಟ್ ಲ್ಯಾಂಡ್ ಫಾರ್ ದೇರ್ ಕಂಪನಿ ದೇರ್ ವರ್ ಪ್ರಾಮಿನೆಂಟ್ ಪೀಪಲ್ ಹೂ ಕೇಮ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಕಂಪ್ಲೀಟ್ಲಿ ಡಿಸ್ಟ್ರಾಯ್ಡ್ ಫಾರೆಸ್ಟ್ ಬೈ ಕಟ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಡೌನ್ ಟ್ರೀಸ್ ವಿ ಆಲ್ ಗಾಟ್ ಪೇಯ್ಡ್ ಅಸ್ ಡೈಲಿ ವೇಜಸ್ ಬಟ್ ದೇ ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸ್ಪೋರ್ಟೆಡ್ ಆಲ್ ಟ್ರೀಸ್ ಟು ಬ್ಯಾಂಗ್ಳೂರ್ ಅಂಡ್ ರೂಯಿನ್ಡ್ ದ ಎಂಟೈರ್ ಫಾರೆಸ್ಟ್ ನೌ ವೆನ್ ಆಲ್ ಆಫ್ ದೆಮ್ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಕಮ್ ಹಿಯರ್ ದೇ ಆರ್ ಇನ್ ಕಂಟ್ರೋಲ್ Earlier, they had a free reign of the forest. Now they are being curtailed. They could live and go anywhere they wanted to in the forest. But now they cannot. There are so many rules and forest officials and guards are everywhere. So these officials and guards think that all people are there to steal or rob something from the forest. Even if it is something very small and minor. This is what has happened. And another thing is that these people who have corrupted these people are the educated ones. You might get offended by my statement. May I continue? Earlier, why was it that there were no police cases or jail term for all these people? But now, why is it that every village has people who have cases against them? One or the other case against them. Why is it so? Please tell me.
The idea of development has not been inclusive. Like, for example, yes, there is a school, there has been fairly good access to education for most of them. But in terms of quality and what has it done for people in this last 30, 40 years, it's still there's still a lot to reconsider and debate on. Have we given people the kind of education that's required? Like, one of the reservations I have is, I still feel one of the schools should have been a tribal school, yeah, where they are still learning their practices, their cultural practices, and are also connected to the modern education system, and they understand how to balance it. So that those components are still missing. And I think that does impact the children. So when they are learning concepts and things which are alien to them, which is not in their immediate surrounding, especially when they are young and then when their cognitive skills are very, very strong, That's something that I feel is missing in a place like this. I wish there were forest schools. I've heard of such forest school where kids spend most of their younger years connecting to their first to their land and their ecosystem, and then they get oriented to the modern education system, and then they learn about the outside world. But here, this education system from day one takes them to the outside world, and they are.
Maybe if you could, because we got the women, if you could tell a little bit about the intent behind the women bakery and like why you thought that was important.
And with women particularly, I think it's very, very challenging in our country. They are still not comfortable voicing their feelings and voicing their needs and talking about it. Even discussing, because even within the Federation, one of the clauses, when we actually co-created the objects of this Federation, we kept re-emphasizing that the economic empowerment is one of it. You doing the business of bakery is one of it, but there are a few other elements of you coming together which are important. So one of it is also, one of it includes self-governance and talking about our commons and discussing on how women would like to be part of it. And another one is also about getting comfortable talking to each other about their own needs. And it could be anything. It could be personal needs. It could be things that they want to say, they want to do. It's still very, very challenging. We are also seeking certain experts who could probably moderate such things for them and get them to talk. Because everything is normalized. Domestic violence is normalized. Even incidents like a woman getting completely frustrated with the situation at home and domestic violence and consuming something which is a pesticide or something and then going to the hospital and coming back, everything is normalized. So they just take it on their stride and just move on. But we can see it, I think, if somebody is observant and the others also feel it. Sometimes when we discuss, we just ask, okay, it's been a month and why is she still not able to participate in something? Then they say, this something like this happened last month. No, so she's feeling bad about it. So it stops at that. But then the expectation is that they recover from their bad feeling or their sad feeling as soon as possible and just get back to work. So that those support systems are still not there. Like, again, when we were talking about singing. We know that when we hear, especially the words, the lyrics of some of the songs that the women sing, is a lot like the women are just sitting together and bitching about somebody who troubled them. It could be the mother-in-law, it could be the sister-in-law. So some of the songs are actually that. But some of the songs are very, very interesting. Some of the songs are about their desires also. I think older people were more interesting to be writing lyrics like that and coining words like that and actually pouring out their thoughts and feelings through songs. But again, that's missing in the younger women. The younger women are not writing or not saying something that they want to say. So we are also trying to get those same songs again, maybe just repeat them and see if they can relate to it. Still quite a challenge. Because everything is normalized, including their drudgery, their pains are normalized.
ಹಳ್ಳಿಗೆ ನಾಗೋಯ್ತು ಆವಾಗ ಈ ಹಳ್ಳಿ ಕಾಯ್ತಿರ್ಲಿಲ್ಲ ಕಾಳಿಗೆ ರಾಗಿ ಹೋಗ್ತಿದ್ರಲ್ಲ ಎತ್ತಿ ಸಾಂಡ್ಬಿಟ್ಟು ಒಬ್ಬನ ಸಾಯಿಸ್ಬಿಡ್ತು ಇನ್ನೊಬ್ಬನ ಹಂಗೆ ಮಿದಿ ಮಾಡಿಬಿಟ್ಟು ಮಿದಿ ತಮ್ಮಂಗಿದ್ದಕ್ಕೆ ತುಳಿದ್ಬಿಟ್ಟು ಅವನ್ನ ಸಾಯಿಸ್ಬಿಡ್ತು ಹೋಯ್ತಾ ಹೋಯ್ತಾ ದಾರಿಲಿ ಒಬ್ಬನ ಸಾಯಿಸ್ಬಿಡ್ತು ಇನ್ನೊಬ್ಬರನ್ನ ಹಂಗೆ ಎತ್ತಿ ಸಣ್ಬಿಟ್ಟು ಸಾಯಿಸ್ಬಿಟ್ಟು ಮನಗಿಸ್ಬಿಟ್ಟು ಚಪ್ಪಲಿ ಬಡ್ಕೆ ಹಾಕ್ಬಿಟ್ಟು ಮ್ಯಾಲ ಸೊಪ್ಪಲ್ಲ ಮುಚ್ಚಿಬಿಟ್ಟು ಹೊಂಟೋಗಿತ್ತು ಆನೆ.
ಈಗ
ಅವಾಗ ಅವಾಗ ಸಾನೆ ದಿನ ಆಗೋಯ್ತು ಕಾಲ ಆಗಿಲ್ಲಿ ಬತ್ತಿದ್ದಾಗ ಅವಾಗ
ಹೇಳ್ತೀನಿ. ಇದನ್ನ ಒಂದು ಹೇಳ್ತೀನಿ. ಸೊ ಶಿ ರಿಮೆಂಬರ್ಸ್ ಫೋರ್ ಇನ್ಸ್ಟೆನ್ಸಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಕ್ಲಿಯರ್ಲಿ, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಆಲ್ ಫೋರ್ ಇನ್ಸ್ಟೆನ್ಸಸ್ ಆರ್ ಆಫ್ ಎಲಿಫೆಂಟ್ಸ್ ಅಟ್ಯಾಕಿಂಗ್ ಪೀಪಲ್. ಸೊ ದ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಒನ್ ಶಿ ರಿಮೆಂಬರ್ಸ್ ವಾಸ್ ಹೌ ಎನ್ ಎಲಿಫೆಂಟ್ ಕಾಟ್ ಸಮನ್ ವಿತ್ ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಟ್ರಂಕ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಥ್ರೂ ಹಿಮ್ ಅವೇ. ದ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ಟೈಮ್ ವಾಸ್ ವೆನ್ ಸಮನ್ ವಾಸ್ ಮೇಕಿಂಗ್ ವಾಸ್ ಕುಕಿಂಗ್ ರಾಗಿ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಹಿ ವಾಸ್ ಟ್ರ್ಯಾಂಪಲ್ಡ್. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ದ ಥರ್ಡ್ ಟೈಮ್ ವಾಸ್ ಅನ್ ಅದರ್ ಕೇಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಸಮನ್ ಬೀಂಗ್ ಥ್ರೋನ್. ಬಟ್ ದ ಫೋರ್ತ್ ಕೇಸ್ ವಾಸ್ ಸಮನ್ ಹೂ ವಾಸ್ ಟ್ರ್ಯಾಂಪಲ್ಡ್, ಬಟ್ ದೆನ್ ದ ಎಲಿಫೆಂಟ್ ಕವರ್ಡ್ ಎವ್ರಿಥಿಂಗ್ ವಿತ್ ಲೀವ್ಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಟ್ರೀಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಎವ್ರಿಥಿಂಗ್ ಟು ಮೇಕ್ ಇಟ್ ಸೀಮ್ ವೆರಿ ನಾರ್ಮಲ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ವೆಂಟ್ ಇಟ್ಸ್ ವೇ.
People have been got out of forest by giving them 2 acres of land. What are they supposed to do with it?
Nothing. Apart from the rains and growing some crops, nothing else can be done. If it rains well, then they can grow crops. And even if they do, there are other problems. There are elephants, and it completely destroys the fields. They say that would be compensated. So, for the 20 sacks of grains they have lost due to an attack by the elephants, they get 2 sacks worth of grain. That is hardly enough. It is very difficult to pursue agriculture in today's times. To cultivate something in 1 acre of land, it would cost anything between 15,000 to 20,000. The process from plowing, weeding, planting seeds, irrigating and bringing the grain to home, what one gets is the same as what one has invested. There is no other profit. And if these animals ruin the crops, then there is absolutely nothing remaining for the people. We try to grow whatever crops we can and try to eke out a living. The problem with the elephants began with the forest department. Now in the Banerghatta National Park, they say there are many acres of land that is fine. But what they do is divide these forest lands like Anekal forest area, Banerghatta forest area, Harohalli forest area, etc. So if any elephant from Harohalli forest area were to venture out, then the farmers would protest and they ask them to take down these elephants, as all the crops and banana plantations are getting destroyed. So these people shoot down these elephants with small pellets and scare and injure them. So now, these elephants are scared of people, and if people venture into forest, they attack them. Now what is happening is that they are chasing these elephants from one forest to another. People from Karnataka chase it towards the neighboring Tamil Nadu state, and they from there to here. What can these poor animals do? The forest officials must not harm them. The government has a lot of money, and so necessary steps can be taken. And beyond that, the farmers can look out. But the animals should also stay, and so must we. And we all are interdependent on one another, and that is how it should be. Instead of finding a solution, if the elephants or other animals are turned from one forest to another and then from one state to another, how are they even supposed to survive? There is no place for them to inhabit. And how would they survive?
So elephants are revered in the whole of Southeast Asia. And we're very thankful to that, actually. Because when elephants, if we say today, occur in 13 Asian elephant range countries, in all of those range countries, they also revere elephants for various reasons, in one form or the other. The cultural association that we have had with elephants, like I said, goes back to ages, right? Of Lord Ganesha and the story of how Ganesha came about. And most of it, very interestingly, and with new literature and new work that's happening in this cultural sphere of how elephants are culturally associated with humans, we're getting to know that also people were probably praying to elephants, to Ganesha, to not destroy the crops, because the farm season is up, and one elephant moving through a crop field could potentially damage a lot of the crop that is being grown. So prayers would be then offered, hoping and praying that the elephants will not come and damage the crops or will have a good harvest. So the elephants are used in festivals today. Elephants have been used in timber logging in the past. In some countries where Asian elephants occur, even today, elephants are used for timber logging. So there's been a very close physical association that people largely in Asia have had with the Asian elephants. You don't see that very much with, let's say, the African elephants, where such close physical proximity and contact on a regular basis can be seen. So this, in some sense, moves from the elephant in the forest to elephants in your city, where people seem to have understood that this close association is something that they have to live with.
I've been a watcher for a long time. I am Basappa. When I joined, I was just a watcher. And then few years later, I got a permanent job here. After becoming permanent, my main job was to keep an eye out for elephants in the forest. See where they come from, where they go, keep an eye on the farmers' lands for elephants, chase the elephants away, and make rounds in the forest. If the elephants went near people's homes, we would keep watch overnight. Then we might hear that an elephant was seen somewhere else. It might be in the area for 7 or 8 days. So we had to stay around and protect the farmers' lands. The first time I saw an elephant, this was not even a national park yet. I saw two elephants then. Back then, I was a pastoralist and used to bring my animals to the forest to graze. Then we heard that the government was putting up some iron structures here. This was the beginning of the national park. After this, the comings and goings of elephants increased a lot. The elephant sightings were fewer before.
Oh. Did you feel fear when you first came across an elephant?
No, I was not afraid of it.
Then?
No, not fear. I was very happy seeing the elephant.
The first time I saw an elephant was in the zoo when I was in college. Mysore Zoo and Banarghatta Zoo. That was the first time I saw an elephant. There is such a difference when you see an elephant in captivity versus when you see it out here in the wild, you know.
Open space prani.
In their body language and in their health, you can see elephants here, they look tremendous in their body language. They're so different because of natural food mainly. Like Basappa said before, at night the elephants can roam more freely and eat their favorite food, which is usually growing on farmers' land, like ragi and coconut. In zoos, the food is limited and controlled. The first time I came here and saw the elephants in the wild, I thought, wow, can elephants really be this big? But when I saw it, I did feel fear, mainly because of its size. It was so different from zoo elephants. But yes, the first feeling I had was fear.
What challenges do you think the elephants have over here?
What problems can the elephant have? The forest has trees, plants and greens. It gets food here. If that wasn't enough, they also take food from the farmers. We have made these solar fences and barriers, but they escape them, break them and go into the farmer's land. They go into the farmer's land and eat their produce. The farmers get agitated and call us and say, "What, Basappa? Your elephants have destroyed our farms."
No, that's not what he's asking, Basappa. He's asking what problems elephants have. What problems do they have because of us?
From us? No, we don't trouble them.
No, but what problems do they have?
I'm not sure I understand. I don't know, sir.
I didn't know about this before. Only after I joined that I realized. Back then, there wasn't this much encroachment in the forest. Now, because of forest clearing and development activities, the space available for elephants to roam has shrunk a lot. In many ways, they've lost a lot of freedom to move around. In Basappa's time, there were hundreds of elephants, is what I've heard. Back then, if an elephant needed to be chased away, it would return after a month or more. Now the same elephant we chase away returns in a week. Why? Because it has nowhere to go. There is no more space for it because of all the things we are doing. So it has no option but to return back here. Like it was in the zoo. It feels like their freedom here has become so restricted that they have nowhere to go. Their favorite food, greens, bamboos, have all diminished. So they need to come out to the farmer's land to eat. I think elephants could feel like they've missed a meal, like how we do sometimes when there's nothing much to eat. I feel like they're going hungry. Water, ponds, small dams, all these things are almost empty and they must also be thirsty. It's not like before when lakes and ponds are filled with water for them to drink. That's what I think.
The basic and the most important aspect that has changed in the area is the land use itself. So if you look at it from an elephant's perspective, an elephant's point of view, an elephant who was born in the 1940s will still be alive today. So they'll be grandmothers mostly. So the memory that they would have had is that of ranging in larger areas, what has today been converted from largely a forested area to, let's say, a crop field or even a built-up area. So the idea that the elephant had of its space, the lived space of an elephant born in 1940 is very different from its lived space today. So the young ones who are born into a herd will follow the elders, the grandmother and the aunts and the mother, in areas where they would range, right? And the grandmothers would go to areas where they used to range. So they can only look at it as change from one forage to another. What was natural forage is today a highly nutritious crop that is being grown by somebody which they don't necessarily understand, but it is still forage for them. So one type of forage they used to get in the 50s, in 2000s, they are getting a different type of forage. That's what they are thinking at, looking at it as. And the young ones who are growing in this area are also thinking that these areas, the human use areas, are part of their foraging areas. And there's nothing wrong in actually going and foraging in these areas because my grandmother is going, my aunt is going. Now, what has changed and the amount of changes that have happened, clearing of forests, let's say, or vehicles coming in and all of these. So that is the real change that the elephants are seeing. So today, their organic space, a space which we call as the, something that they can see, hear, touch, smell, taste, that organic space is not only filled with smells of other animals or livestock and trees and other water and other things. It also has a lot of vehicles, it has people, it has various other things, smells of crops that have come up and all of that. And so the organic space has changed. So for an elephant who's living today in that organic space, its imagined space is still in the 40s and 50s where the forest was. And I think the conflict for an elephant is really coming between its current organic space and its imagined space, which is today's lived space. It's very similar to humans, I would think, because somebody who's gone through a lot over a long period of time and has memories of it, and that has changed completely today, my organic space is in conflict with my imagined space. And that conflict is my current lived space. And I don't think it's very different for the elephants at all. So whenever even I think of conflict between humans and elephants, I really think it's in the mind, because the space that we live in has changed or altered completely.
How do I talk about the relationship between man and elephant? I think in the olden days, people would treat elephants like they would treat God. Now these new age tech people don't see them with the same reverence. Back then, if an elephant damaged 10% of a farmer's plot, they'd say, it's okay, and continue to farm in the remaining 90%. Now, because the farmers themselves don't even have 10% of the land to grow their crops in, they can't afford to have elephants come and ruin their livelihood. They feel this loss so much more, these farmers. What Basappa said earlier, that elephants have become more now. I think that elephants were there then, they're here now also. The only difference is that they don't have space anymore. That's why people are seeing them more often. There's another issue here. Elephants have great memory. This land, this forest was theirs. It is their corridor and they would roam freely. Now with people coming and building these things, they claim the land for themselves. But whose land is it? Is it the elephant's land that people have taken over? Or is it the people's land that elephants are destroying? We all want elephants, don't we? We want them because it's a thrill to see them. We want them because we need elephants for cultural and religious programs. But if we see an elephant in the wild, people won't accept it.
ಈಗಾನೇ ನಾವು ಎಲ್ಲ ರೀತಿಗೆ ಎಲ್ಲ ಒಂದಿದ್ದು ನಮ್ಮ ಖುಷಿಗೆ ಬೇಕು, ಅದು ನೋಡೋಕ್ಕೆ ಆಗಲಿ, ಸಮ ನಮ್ಮ ವರ್ಕ್ ಅದರಿಂದ ಏನಾದರೂ ಒಂದು ವರ್ಕ್ ಮಾಡ್ಕೊಳ್ಳೋದಾಗಲಿ.
ಮೆನಿ ಎಲಿಫೆಂಟ್ಸ್ ಹವ್ ಟಾಟ್ ಮಿ ಡಿಫ್ರೆಂಟ್ ಥಿಂಗ್ಸ್. ಟು ಥಿಂಕ್ ಒನ್, ಯು ನೋ, ವೀವ್ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ಎಲಿಫೆಂಟ್ಸ್ ಹೂ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಶೋನ್ ಅ ಲಾಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಎಂಪತಿ, ಐ ವುಡ್ ಸೇ, ಟುವರ್ಡ್ಸ್ ಅದರ್ ಎಲಿಫೆಂಟ್ಸ್. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಐ ರಿಮೆಂಬರ್ ಇನ್ ಒನ್ ಸಿಚುವೇಶನ್ ವೇರ್ ಇಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ಅ high conflict area, and they were older bulls and they were younger males, and every time people were very close to the elephants, the older bulls would actually protect the younger ones. They would come in front and put the younger ones away from the people and take them along to areas that were safer. So just look at that relationship is basically telling me that elephants do avoid conflict. They don't want to be in conflict. If left alone, they would like to do their own thing. And by doing that, they're also building strong social bonds with one another, because the younger one is looking after the older elephant and thinking that there is someone to actually protect me as well, and that I'll not be you know, exposed to harm right away. And what they do is follow these older bulls into non-conflict areas, or rather I would say they diffuse conflict in some sense. Very often what happens is we tend to remove older elephants because they just look larger, and they, because of conditioning, they're habituated to people, so they don't respond by running away all the time. And we've had elephants like that. Hirastar is one such elephant who was so used to being around people that people felt that he had lost fear. And that was something that did not go in favor of him being in that landscape. So you would want an elephant to immediately move away, but what very often we don't understand is that if an elephant starts running, it can potentially cause more damage than an elephant who is walking calm, collected manner and is moving away from conflict. So removing such older bulls from an area has dire consequences to the other individuals, younger individuals especially, but also for people, because you're then left with no older elephant to teach a younger elephant to be calm in a conflict situation. So young elephants tend to respond aggressively because they're scared. They're fearful of what people are doing, and they're also inexperienced. They don't know what to do. But if a Hirastar was around, you would have an elephant who would learn to be calm and respond to a situation appropriately. So I think that relationship that Hirastar had with a number of bulls in that area has had a profound influence on my life. And I've tried to tell this story to many people so that they understand the importance of a large bull in an area. And it's not just that larger the elephant, the more damage it causes. It never is the case. In fact, it was doing the job of, let's say, 50, 60 Forest Department officials who were trying to move the elephant out of the area.
People from older generations are good. They know the feel. They would say, so sad, there is no water in the lake. Let the elephants drink our water. Do you understand? Another example. Earlier, elephants would come and eat some leaves from our trees, and back then people would be so happy, excitedly telling others, an elephant ate from our tree. Now, people mostly complain, saying an elephant ate from the tree we planted with so much effort and now it's destroyed. That's the difference between older generations and this one. When elephants travel outside, we need to chase them away. Usually because it is the night when they come out. Their eyes are very sharp and we need to use torches. They can tell where there are pits and traps. That's their ability. They have these special qualities. Recently, there was an elephant in a banana grove. We had to chase it away to another forest using crackers. They run away in ways that we can't follow. You maybe see it as risky, but it is very common for us. We live among them, no?
So, elephants are very superior when it comes to cognition. And we know very clearly that they have a mental map of the land in which they roam. And they need to constantly update this mental map. And so anything that changes in that landscape or in the range that they roam in, they need to keep themselves updated with it, because only then can they navigate that space. And their navigation is really driven either by availability of resources or threats. And elephants, we also know, are social beings. So they are going to pass that memory on, or that learning, from one elephant to the other. So the other younger elephants are going to pick that up. So it's transferred, or it's moved on across generations. So that memory is going to stay. And any change that has happened in that is going to be recorded. And it's going to be used as an adaptive behavior where a certain response is going to come in. And sometimes extreme adaptations. in places where there are no forests, and now they are completely crop fields or human use areas, elephants seem to scout for large water bodies, and they go and stay in those water bodies because that's the only place of refugia that they find in a sea of human beings, let's say. But that adaptability is coming from the idea that a space like this, a water which we drink and bathe in, can not just provide us with that water that we need to quench our thirst, but is also a place of refugia, that we can actually go and take shelter there, and we are safer than most other places around. So they're constantly mapping these changes, and they're adapting very quickly to such changes. So the current lived space that the elephants are in, and where I think the conflict is really that change, right? Because we are all trying to grapple with what's happening, with the uncertainties around us, which is either brought through climate change, mostly. But what we see today is not some gradual change that is happening, but very erratic weather events. Very heavy rainfall in very short periods of time, followed by prolonged periods of drought. We've never had that, but that's something that we are seeing. And farmers would like to respond to that because the cropping patterns have to change completely, because it's uncertain when the rains are going to come and when the crops are going to be ready. And at that time, if the rain comes, then the crops are also going to be ruined. Elephants too are responding to these erratic weather events, sometimes by showing large extended movements, what we call as dispersals, sometimes missing out or mistiming their arrival into certain areas, because they are hoping, and from their memory that they know that there will be some forage available during this period of time, but when they come to that place, it's not there. So solstalgia is extremely real for non-humans as well.
There is another thing. We are living here, but the land belongs to them. The land belongs to these animals who have been there from times immemorial. Now, we have taken their place. So where should they go? And also they need to survive. The land belongs to the animals and the forest. And if we were to take over their land, how is it right? And which God would accept this injustice and forgive us? We are living where they should live, and all of us must live in harmony.
It's something that they have to grapple with, largely driven by an anthropogenic era that we are living in and the change that has been brought about by us humans. But we see that very quickly in a species like elephant. Also, to just touch upon the point of climate change, we are now seeing elephants moving higher up in altitude. So we are seeing elephants in Kunur, we are seeing elephants in Kodaikanal, we are seeing elephants in Idukki. A lot of the elephants are moving up. So why are they doing that? Are they able to track certain moisture in the habitat and hence move up? Are the first ones who are coming there actually scouts and will be followed by more elephants later? None of these we know fully yet. But I think they are giving us enough signs and cues to say that something is changing in the habitat, and they are able to use their adaptive behaviors to respond to that. The landscape has changed for them too.